Welcome to Season 4, Episode 5 of The Composter. Today you get to meet Ryan Green from Happy Trash Can Curbside Composting in Bozeman, Montana. But before I introduce Ryan, I want to share the story that led to this conversation, so brace yourselves. Back in September, I traveled to Atlanta for the Biodegradable Products Institute Summit, or BPI Summit, joining composters, corporations, and the bioplastics industry. I went in with no expectations, just curiosity. As many of you know, our organic farm produces OMRI-listed compost, which means we can't accept bioplastics at our facility. Even so, I want to understand and represent the whole compost industry, and that made it important for me to really listen to what's happening in the bioplastics world. I'm so glad I did. The tone for the entire trip was set almost immediately. After landing, I hopped into an Uber driven by Jimmy, who had recently immigrated from Haiti. In just 20 minutes, he shared what life is like there now. His words, hell on earth. Scarcity, violence, fear, starvation. I asked how it got to that point. While the history is incredibly complex, he distilled it down to this. When people stopped caring for the land could no longer care for the people. Resource depletion led to chaos. To reach the Dominican border to get out, Jimmy had to pass through 17 gang territories, paying each one just to get through. He described undrinkable water, food shortages, and beaches covered in trash, people wading through a plastic-laden ocean. It was heavy, but it sharpened my perspective heading into the summit. How do we prevent hell on earth? And more importantly, how do we create heaven on earth? So when I walked into a conference centered on reducing waste and building better materials, I saw the bioplastics industry through a new lens. Bioplastics aren't a magic bullet, and I'm still not convinced all biodegradable products make good compost ingredients. But with the amount of single-use packaging in our world, we need better options, fast. It was encouraging to see major corporations in the room, like the sponsors Georgia-Pacific and Chick-fil-A. I'm not here to promote corporations, but if the largest players transition to truly compostable, rigorously tested products, that's a huge leap forward. Imagine if every Dixie cup from Georgia-Pacific broke down in 30 days, or if all of Chick-fil-A's packaging fully composted, that would make an enormous difference to the planet. Of course, not all products marketed as biodegradable are created equally. Many knockoffs have become the bane of composters everywhere, but there are people working hard to make certified compostable products better. There's certified agencies that help to steer the way things biodegrade, and the industry is evolving. The question is how we work together to ensure these materials help, not hinder soil health. Which brings me to Ryan. At the BPI Summit, I moderated a panel on public-private partnerships with 5 panelists, each with firsthand experience navigating relationships between composters and municipalities. Bill Whitley from Spur Industries, Ryan Green from Happy Trash Can Curbside Composting, Marissa D. Dominicis from Earth Matter New York, Abigail Sawyer from Athens Clark County Solid Waste Department, and Ben Perry from Compost Crew. There was so much to unpack about how these partnerships can support, not sideline, experienced composters. I've heard too many stories about municipalities receiving grant funding and unintentionally reinventing the wheel, leaving private composters out of the conversation. I want to see systems where everyone benefits. Ryan Green is one of those composters. He has valuable experience working with the city of Bozeman and processing certified compostable products and food scraps. And fun fact, one of his highlights from the summit was presenting alongside Marissa from Earth Matter. The first time he ever saw a facility truly accepting and processing certified compostable products was with Marissa and Charlie back in 2013. So for Ryan, sharing the stage was a full circle moment. I love these compost connections. So let's dive deep into my conversation with Ryan Green from Happy Trash Can Curbside Composting. This episode is brought to you by Green Mountain Technologies at compostingtechnology.com and AgriLab Technologies. Visit them at agrilabtech.com/podcast. Welcome to The Composter, a podcast for compost lovers. Gravity rings around Saturn and Mike. I'm your host and fellow composter, Jane Murner. Through real conversations with composters and industry professionals, we are digging deep into the science, technology, and art of compost production. Whether you're managing a large-scale site or just compost curious, this podcast is here to inform, inspire, and connect us all as part of a growing movement to enliven the world's soils. Green Mountain Technologies has been a leading composting technology firm since 1992. Our clients cover the spectrum of small farms, institutions, and resorts, along with the largest composting facilities in North America. From our Earthflow composter to ASP Technologies and compost turners, we offer solutions for every commercial composting opportunity. Visit compostingtechnology.com and mention the Composter Podcast for a free consultation. This summer, I visited Vermont Natural Ag Products, the home of Mudu Compost. One thing that really stood out was an innovative system from AgriLab Technologies that both speeds the compost process using aeration and captures thermal heat from the compost to warm the Mudu bagging barn. Ingenious. I reached out to Brian at AgriLab Technologies afterwards, and I'm thrilled to share that they now generously sponsor this podcast. AgriLab Technologies provides solutions for efficient composting. Their team works with farmers, commercial, institutional, and municipal composters to save energy, labor, and space on your site. Their modular compost aeration equipment and technical support services improves process control, making better compost faster, with less odor and impact. They can also capture renewable thermal energy from composting to heat nearby buildings, wash water, and for drying finished compost. Build your soil and burn less oil. Reach out to AgriLab Technologies today. Visit us at agrilabtech.com/podcast. Hey, Ryan, welcome to the Composter.
Hey, Jane, thanks so much for having me.
I'm super happy to have you on and get to see you again. Can you tell us a little bit about your operation, who you are, where you're located, and when you started, everything about your site?
Yeah, I'd be more than happy to. So Happy Trash Can Curbside Composting started in late 2016, started by myself and my wife and business partner, Adrian Huckabone, in Adrian's hometown of Bozeman, Montana. So we've been in operation for 9 years now. We provide organics pickups, residential and commercial, and we process all of our collected material and distribute and sell the finished compost back out to our local community. And over the last 4 years, we have also secured some big public contracts with Bozeman Solid Waste. And actually, just this last couple months, we have also secured a pilot project with the city of Livingston, Montana as well.
Hey, congratulations. That's exciting.
Thank you.
So we were both at the BPI Summit in Atlanta in September, just a little over a month ago. Can you tell us about that summit, your experience there at the conference, what your highlights and takeaways were, and a little bit more about BPI?
Yeah, totally. So BPI, the Bioplastics Institute, for us as composters, haulers, and processors, are the gold standard, if you will, of certified compostable packaging and products. We accept a lot of this material at our site, and it is important for us to know that this material is actually going to break down, decompose in our systems. So we have relied on BPI and CMA, TUVOK, these third-party certifiers for the last 7 years that we've accepted this material. So it was a great opportunity to go to the BPI Summit this year in Atlanta, which was my first conference, my first BPI Summit. And I'll say, with any conference, my favorite part is always seeing and connecting with community composters and others working in our industry.
Did you get to go on any of the tours?
I sure did. Yep. Yeah. Definitely a highlight was checking out the Compost Now food waste hub and their facility as well. So wonderful to see an organization, a company of that size, and see how they are expanding their markets and to see how they have worked the logistics of collections and processing incoming material, then transporting it to another facility with quite some distance between them in an effective way. And learning about that process was truly awesome.
I feel like that's the best way for me to learn is to go to these sites and see what they're doing and get new ideas. And also sometimes it's like, wow, we're actually doing a good job at our site. And, you know, sometimes it's that. And sometimes it's like, oh, I'm going to take that nugget and add that into our process. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely reaffirming and inspiring all at the same time.
One of my highlights at the conference was moderating the panel that you were on, as well as a bunch of others, about public-private partnerships. It was neat. We could have spoken a lot more on that panel. I feel like there was maybe a few too many of us, and I just wanted to dive in so much deeper, but we only had so much time. So I'm glad you're on today to talk about it a little bit more. Can you share how Happy Trash Can's involvement and experience with public-private partnerships has been working? What are the challenges, the positives, the potential pitfalls, and all the things when working with municipalities?
Yeah, it was truly awesome to be on that panel. And there was a decent amount of us with a wide range of exposure to the private-public partnership realm. Happy Trash Can, I was there representing our business, and we were the newer kids on the block, if you will, when it comes to this kind of setup. And really great to be up there with Spurt and Earth Matter and others to learn about their processing and how they got to this point. Yeah, when it comes to the PPPs, in our experience, working with our municipality has been positive. And we genuinely believe the collaborative model should be more widely adopted around the country. The city of Bozeman could have easily chosen to build its own independent composting program, but instead, its solid waste leadership recognized the value of partnering with us, an existing operator who had already built a local system over many years. We've seen a lot of other local community composters who have been doing this work for a decade or more and then get steamrolled by their local government. So we don't take this partnership for granted at all. And whenever I do speak to other community composters or even other municipalities around the country that are interested in how this partnership works, we really give a lot of credit to Bozeman Solid Waste and its leadership and the way that it is set up too. It is an enterprise of the city. It is not tax-based funded. It is funded through its own service fees. So it does give them a lot of flexibility when it comes to subcontracting out work. So with that being said, there are a lot of models out there for working between composters and municipalities where maybe the municipality is providing a subsidy for pickup and processing, where we see that a lot. Ours is in the fact where both parties were able to lean into their strong points. For Bozeman Solid Waste, they are really good at hauling material, as you could imagine. They haul landfill, they haul recycling, and now they're hauling organics. They have the infrastructure to move a lot of material. Now, for years, the city had offered a free seasonal yard waste pickup. So they were already working with the community to provide pickup of grass clippings, brush, yard debris, etc., and were composting it themselves on their site. I think for them, that is where they kind of had a little shortfall and couldn't put as much energy or time into the processing of said material. For us, while we were doing both hauling and processing from the get-go, we really always wanted to lean into the processing side of things. We wanted to invest our money and capital into gaining or securing equipment to help us with processing. For instance, the Gore Cover ASP systems that we utilize. On the front end, we're just using trucks and trailers and box trucks with lift gates, which is a totally great way to haul material, but not in a way that's going to ultimately, in our view, allow us to scale up. So we were both able to come to the table. Bozeman Solid Waste saw that we had invested in this technology, that we had a strong processing side to our business, and then knew that they would need some sort of partner like that to be able to process more incoming waste, but also the added aspect of including food scraps into this feedstock. So we're still relatively new into this whole process. While we have been working with Bozeman Solid Waste, which for 4 years in February 2026, really the inked contract and the new organics program is only roughly 6 months old, rolled out back in April. So we're still working through what that looks like in the long term of accepting this material, processing it. It's really been a great opportunity, and we appreciate the opportunity to work collaboratively with the municipality to expand composting in our community in a greater way than I think we could do solely as a small private business.
Can you explain those service fees a little bit more? I haven't heard about that way of funding rather than just taxpayer money through the municipality.
Yeah. So talking about how potentially a municipality would support a community composter. Yeah. So you can see this model. I think a great example is the Compost Queen down in Colorado. Jamie and Max just signed actually a contract with their local municipality to expand. The way that it is explained to me, and don't quote me on this, maybe I'll have to have them on the podcast next, but the private company has a set price for what their services entail. And I do believe down there in Colorado with Compost Queen, it is not only residential, but also commercial too. And essentially, the municipality just subsidizes part of the fee for the consumer. So instead of paying $20 a month to the private business, I think that the consumer pays $5 and then the city subsidizes the remaining portion of that. And so I think it's a good way for them to explore the feasibility of a wide-scale composting program while supporting a small business that's already spearheading this type of pickup service.
Okay, great. Yeah, there's talk in our state adding a fee at the landfill for regular trash, like an extra dollar per ton or something that would go specifically to offset composting.
That's great.
Yeah. So there's lots of different models out there, but I like to hear them all and see what works for different areas.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So let's go back to your experience composting BPI products or any of the third party certified different biodegradable. I don't know if I'm supposed to say biodegradable or what the actual term is there, but the compostable products.
Yeah.
How has your experience been with them? And is it consistently breaking down? And there's lots of different viewpoints on the products out there.
Totally. Yeah, this is the $1 million question, isn't it?
Yes.
Overall, our experience with processing these products has been positive. We started working with the Bozeman Farmers Market in 2018 to compost all their certified compostables that were being used at the market. This led us to working with many other local businesses who wanted to transition to these products, but not before knowing that they had an end-of-life destination to actually compost them locally. We currently work with two local farmers markets, the Bozeman Food Co-op, Bridger Bowl, Montana State University, and many other local businesses to have post-consumer collections of these materials. Ultimately, accepting these materials have helped our business. The reason for that is this is something that our community wants. They want an alternative to single-use plastics. We're happy to be able to provide the ability to accept and compost these materials locally and also work with a local supplier, Eco Montana, to promote this alternative. By accepting these materials, it has certainly led us to working with larger institutions in our area that I don't think we normally would have the opportunity to work with. An example of that would be Bridger Bowl, our local ski hill, community-run ski hill, I might add. As part of their sustainability goals, they switched all serviceware to certified compostable products about 4 years ago. We had been working with them for, I think, a year prior or two before that on a very small scale. But once we established the working relationship, they said, hey, we want to get rid of as much single-use plastics as possible. Would you all be willing to accept this large volume from us? And of course, we said yes. This is a major outlet that puts out about 10 yards a week of these products. That I'll add, we hand pick through 10 yards of this material on a weekly basis. And I mean, I feel like that's even on the small end of things. Yeah. But It's a lot of work, to say the least. It's a lot of work. But they're putting out this large volume of this material, of these compostable products. There's not actually a lot of food waste in this material. Most people are eating that. Their kitchens are not producing a lot of food waste as well, too. So it is primarily these products. So if we did not accept this material, it would be a loss of ultimately a big client that we'd not be able to service. But I think more importantly, we would lose out on a large audience of daily skiers and snowboarders going to the hill to ride, but then coming across post-consumer composting in the lodge, which gives them an opportunity to learn about composting, to learn about proper source separation, but then, of course, to also learn about our business and the work that we're doing in the community.
What does your sorting process look like? Is that just you and Adrian with grabbers picking through?
Pretty much. They're others. It's not, it's not anything sophisticated by any stretch of the imagination. We don't have a pick line. We're not using any sort of automation, that's for sure. We pick up this material in a dump trailer, and actually Bridger Bull has a dump trailer as well, so we can do a swap out every time and don't have to backhaul an empty trailer, which is awesome. All of the materials bagged in certified compostable bags, and then it is primarily, as I mentioned, just certified compostable products, and then of course contamination. So we dump all the material out onto the ground, and we literally systematically rip open every bag and go through and pull out contamination. I would say we are pulling out 20 to 30 gallons of contamination per 10 yard on a weekly basis. So not great, but not horrible in the same breath. And that brings me truly back to the hurdles of taking these products. It's the elephant in the room. It's the contamination issue. And to address this, we have spent years working with our clients and the public to educate them on looking for BPI, RCMA, RTUVOK certifications when purchasing products, but also when placing them into compost bins. I would say we've had great success with this mission, and it is in part due to the fact that our community wants this. These businesses want an alternative to single-use plastics because consumers want an alternative to single-use plastics. And yes, these materials do actually break down in our GOR ASP systems. We were part of the Closed Loop Partners Degradation and Contamination Study a few years back. And I do encourage folks who are hesitant to accept these materials to refer to those studies and see the results for themselves.
Yeah, I heard a little bit. I went to one of those workshops at the summit about extreme testing that's done to make sure the BPI products do actually compost in a short amount of time and fully break down. There was a lot of rigorous testing. Wow, I'm kind of coming around. Our compost is OMRI listed, and so we actually can't take these products in. For a long time, I think I was maybe on the wrong side of things, thinking, I think we got to get back to reusables, like people having mugs and actually water bottles that we can refill and things. But you're right. Society is not grasping it, not taking that on. And we still need to make great compost. And so I've had a little shift where if all of the single-use plastics were bioplastics, biodegradable, we would have so much less problem when we travel and see the ocean full of plastic and roadsides full of plastic and woods in Thailand that are plastic-laden. I'm starting to shift a little bit in my thinking for sure. It's opening me up, but still not ready to take it into my compost yet because of our OMRI. I want to honor those organic farmers.
Yeah.
But I'm very much in support of the initiative and the move in that direction. So,
I would agree with you completely. I want us all to have really, and I think it's a larger societal shift, is to have the time and the capacity to bring my reusable coffee mug, bring my reusable water bottle, sit down and have lunch on plates with silverware. And not have to constantly be rushing around and, oh, shoot, I forgot lunch today. I got to grab something. Yeah, I agree that ideally we are not using so much single-use products because ultimately it's great that this material breaks down, but it's not adding nutrients into our finished product. We view it as a carbon source. I kind of like to think it helps out with bulk density, a little porosity, but maybe I'm being a little silly with that.
It's kind of a sugar for microbes.
It works in the process. And to comment on the OMRI approval, that is something obviously we cannot do. We do live in an area where there are a couple of certified organic farms, But primarily a lot of the small farms that are in the Bozeman area in Gallatin County have chosen to not go OMRI or to not be certified organic because they want to work with us to supply local fertility in the community. And that's been a big driving force of our business since day one, is to connect our community's waste stream back to local agricultural production. With that being said, we did work with a few farm clients this last April to make public comment with the National Organic Standards Board to kind of say, hey, us as a hauler and a producer, and then clients purchasing our products, local farms purchasing our product, to say, we want to certify organic. We're already doing organic practices besides this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
It is restrictive to them as a business in some cases, because some consumers are just looking for a certified organic logo, as opposed to talking to their producer and understanding the practices that go into it. So we did make public comment, and I'm interested to see how things go. Something tells me we won't see anything for the next 3.5 years, though.
Yeah.
Move forward on that end.
Yep. Green Mountain Technologies doesn't believe in one-size-fits-all solutions. We offer cutting-edge engineered composting solutions for large facilities and simple on-site solutions for farms, resorts, and institutions. Our consulting services include odor control solutions, operational planning, and permitting assistance, along with feedstock handling and recipe development. Visit compostingtechnology.com and mention the Composter podcast for a free consultation. AgriLab Technologies. Visit them at agrilabtech.com/podcast. Yeah, okay. I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk about the biggest funding challenges for composting programs and how they are being addressed in the PPP partnerships. Wow, that's a lot of piece.
That's a mouthful, isn't it?
We sort of tapped into it a little bit, but does it open it up to other grants or things that, you know, you wouldn't have been able to access as a private composter?
Yeah, that's a great question. Maybe I will just step back and talk about what we view as a big challenge, and maybe not funding per se, but a hurdle for operating a compost facility. And here in Montana, in our region, the biggest monetary challenge is access to land and the affordability of that land. So we, over the years, have seen many local farms close down because they were just small. Farmers leasing land, price of land going up for development, and any land-based business in Montana is definitely feeling the pinch about that access. The big thing with this partnership with Bozeman Solid Waste that has helped us solve this issue is having access to their land. So we operate off of a city property, the old Bozeman landfill, in fact. Mm. It is conveniently located 4 miles from Main Street.
Wow.
So
yeah.
right outside, right on the most northern limits of town. It's a great facility that was already permitted for composting.
Oh, that saves so much time. Oh my
goodness. So much time.
Yeah.
Probably, maybe not as much time as in other areas. Montana is definitely still the Wild West of, okay. of permitting. There's permitting processes for small and large scale facilities here. But Montana DEQ, I think they do a great job of towing the line of making sure things are in place to ensure that these facilities are having a net positive gain, but also not putting too much regulatory red tape up to inhibit the opening of compost facilities. But back to it, land access. That's our biggest hurdle. While we own all of our own equipment, securing a suitable location is what made the expansion possible. On the funding side, hauling operation has been the backbone of our financial sustainability, pretty much subsidizing the investments required on the processing end. And then in regards to grants, we have never actually secured a grant that we have received money for, but we have signed on as partners for the city and also the county to receive grant money as well. So Bozeman Solid Waste, they received an EPA grant, and the Gallatin County received a USDA grant to expand compost in their facilities. We, with the city's grant, we did not see a dime of that money. They invested that money into trucks and toters and staffing on their end. And we knew this going in as well, too. But ultimately, again, going back to wanting to focus on investment and back-end processing, with that grant, it gave them the green light to really go forward with this year-round program and open up, in my opinion, a broader range of consumers that would participate, as opposed to getting just a 5-gallon bucket that they put their food scraps into. These are people that have historically composted their yard debris and all their grass clippings and food waste. They're like, what? You can do this too? But now it has given them the opportunity to divert even more. And it's secured a revenue stream for us of large feedstocks coming into the site for us to process, but also to, of course, a place to work out of.
Yeah. Is that stuff coming in clean?
Yeah, the city material is coming in quite clean. It's been running since April. The biggest issue, I would say, is cardboard. Traditional cardboard with packaging tape is kind of the biggest contaminant that we've seen. People really wanting to just, oh, it's cardboard, I'm going to compost this instead of just putting it in their recycling bin. Which we would much rather them do. We don't want to take away from a successful recycling stream by any stretch of the imagination. But we did work closely with Bozeman Solid Waste to roll out education and then also roll out what we would accept as their processor. And one note that I will mention about that, we collectively decided to exclude certified compostable materials in this new program that the city has rolled out.
Okay. For what reason? Tell me about that.
For a couple of reasons, primarily just knowing that we are starting to work with a larger consumer base that has not had as intensive or direct education that they would have if they were a customer, an existing customer of ours. We do a lot of email communications, welcome letters, answering questions all the time via phone as well about, yes, put this in your bin. No, don't put this in your bin. So we thought, using other municipalities as an example too, we thought it's easier to add something down the road than it is to have it there at the beginning, make a big contamination mess, and then try to backpedal that.
Yeah, simpler messaging if it's just food scraps and yard materials. Yeah,
Exactly. With that all being said, there's definitely certified compostable materials coming in through these loads.
Yeah.
And that is in part due to the work that we had done for the previous 7 years or 8 years or so, educating our community and our customers, switching from our service over to the city's service, already historically knowing what's okay to put into the compost bin, what kind of certifications to look for, and still wanting that opportunity. I'll say this to why we thought to exclude this material at first. And I wouldn't say it's necessarily panned out the way that we originally thought, but it was also a way to still run and promote our own curbside and drop-off programs. To say, like, well, we can still hopefully maintain this side of our business, which has been a successful part of our business and an important revenue stream for us, especially through this transition period of seeing customers leave to go to the city while waiting for that revenue to kind of build up to the point of where the residential hauling was. So we thought, well, people might switch to the city and we'll say, well, you know, you can't put the compostables in there, but why don't you sign up for our pay what you can drop off program? You're paying $10 for the city. You can pay $5 for the drop off. You're still at that original $15, which we charged. I know. Can you believe it? 20, 25. and then you're still being able to compost everything that you want to. While I don't think it's quite worked out to that capacity, that was a little bit of a thought process on our end, not the city's by any means, but on ours. But really, the thought is, let's add it down the road. Let's see how this program gets on its feet and then think about adding it later on.
And then does the city pay you a per ton fee for the food scraps they're collecting and bringing in?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, all exactly. Right. It's essentially a tip fee that they pay for us. I will say that being able to work with the city in this capacity was, we were working off of a very loose service agreement for many years. And we said, hey, we'd like to have a more proper contract in place to just kind of set out guidelines and understanding and then also renegotiate the price that we were charging them too as well. Because when we first rolled on, we didn't quite know. I had some thoughts of what our costs were going to be, but we didn't see the true cost for a year or so. And especially as we invested in more equipment, but we were able to really, and it comes from the city's side as well. There was just a mutual understanding there of what both parties need and what both parties want out of this program. Negotiating what we feel was a successful contract gives us that confidence to really move forward with this program.
This is sparking something kind of on the side, but when we were in Atlanta, got that tour of Compost Now, I saw that they supply the compostable products to their consumers, which is, I think, not only a great income source, but also that's going to biodegrade. And it's probably getting things a lot cleaner.
Yeah.
I really liked seeing that kind of integrated model there. And I wonder, are you guys doing anything like that or anything on the pipeline for that?
Yeah, I agree. And I think Compost Now, too, if you can, especially if you're a business a client or events, like you have to be purchasing these products directly through them. I think it's super smart. No, we don't have any intention of doing that right now. As I mentioned earlier, there is a local supplier of this material.
Yeah.
Eco Montana, the owner Heidi, she had already established being the local supplier. So we want to collaborate. You know, we want to partner. We don't want to step on Heidi's toes. We want to honor the work that she's put in. And for us to, I would say a big driving force for the business is simplicity and keeping things as streamlined as possible. And that's a whole nother headache of, you know, and I've already mentioned, not only is just land hard to come by in Gallatin County, but any sort of warehouse space as well, too. So it's hard to come by. It's expensive. So that would be a bunch of new overhead that we're kind of, the problem's already solved. We're there. We do a lot of correspondence. And it's not that you have to buy it from Eco Montana. We'll take anything that people are buying offline as well. But we do try to push them towards Eco Montana to say, hey, you're also supporting another local business in this process as well. It's tried and true. We trust. We know Heidi is only purchasing these certified materials instead of Webstrong.com with varying, yes, it's certified. What does that mean? So, yeah.
Mm. Wow. Okay. So we talked about this a little bit, but I feel like public education is such a big part of our success in the future as this industry grows.
Mm-hmm.
And what role does public education play in making these partnerships work? It's a big question.
Yeah. That public education, public-private partnerships, single businesses, it's instrumental to having a successful program. And education has been foundational for us from day one. In the early years, we spent countless weekends tabling at farmers markets, staffing source separation stations at events, giving talks to clients in schools, meeting with clients directly to educate about composting and its importance, but especially around these certified compostable materials, what's okay to put in the bin, what's not okay to put in the bin. I would say because our service is private and opt-in, the people who participate tend to be motivated composters, which makes contamination management easier. Mm. If we see contamination, we communicate directly with the offenders and we 99% of the time see a course of correction. This is based on our private business, but I like to think we had some impact in the last 9 years of educating our community about composting, but about proper source separation and what to look for in these products that has extended into the city program. That is their program.
Mm-hmm.
We are part of it. We are their contracted processors, and we have had input in what would be accepted, and we've previewed all the educational material and all the toter stickers that were going on everything, said yes, no, and had back and forth for sure. But it is their program. And so we do, as it is a partnership, we do also look at them as a client and know that they have their own goals and their own expectations of what they want from this program. So we are there to process this material. And as it's coming in, we do inspect it. Definitely, it's a little bit different when it's coming in a big compactor truck than it is for us as we are hand dumping toters out onto the ground. But they have a dedicated group of drivers too that are invested in this, that are also as they're going around, and they have much more sophisticated technology. You know, they have these hydraulic lift arms with cameras on it, and they can view what's in the bin before it gets dumped in, and they can reject the load and then leave a note for that household to say, this is why we didn't accept it. They are working to stop contamination before it even gets onto the site. And then also those drivers as well are, they're just not dumping a load and getting out of there. They are also with us going quickly through to pull out any big contamination that we can see with our eyes.
That's great. Having a relationship with the drivers is really important because you're seeing them regularly.
Exactly. And you know how important that relationship is. And we're all in this together here. That's
yesterday,
what it comes down to.
One of our drivers from a different company, but brought us a pumpkin bread to the office. I feel like I'm supposed to be doing that for them, but it was so sweet. I love that, the connections. That's what makes it all work and more enjoyable.
Completely. Yeah. Completely.
Yeah. Will you be at the USCC Compost Conference in February?
Yes, Adrian and I do plan to go there. Yep. Okay. And then we're excited too, because it's going to coincide with the Community Compost Coalition conference as well too.
Great. Yeah, I'll be at one day of that. I think it's a 2-day thing. I'll be at the second day and then at the other conference as well. That'll be fun to see you guys.
Yes, definitely.
And then last question, is there anything else you want to share with this compost community?
Oh, yeah. Geez. For us, it is the last 9 years. We'll celebrate 10 years of business in 2026. It's been awesome. My background is I went to culinary school right out of high school. I worked in restaurants for a long time. I got interested in local foods from working with farmers there. Went back, got a degree in agroecology, worked on farms for a long time. And I thought that local foods was going to be the big answer, which it is obviously a large component, but realized there's this whole other world too of waste management and composting. And then worked with the New York City Compost Project hosted by the Lower East Side Ecology Center, which was truly inspiring, that organization. It's an incubator, in my opinion, on a national level of getting folks educated and working in the composting field that then go on to start their own businesses, run larger sites around the country. It was truly an awesome experience and what inspired Adrian and I to move back to Bozeman to start up Happy Trash Can. But basically what I'm trying to get out here and want to share is we are honored and grateful to be part of this industry. We really believe that it is an industry that wants to do right by human and environmental health, that wants to help reshape and overhaul our solid waste systems, to divert material from the landfill, which is very important to divert this organic material to reduce emissions, but then also in the same breath, connecting all of that back to soil health and working to educate folks about the importance of soil health and working with local farmers and procuring local produce and supporting them, especially right now as we see our agricultural industry being kind of hit pretty hard. It's inspiring on a daily basis. And I'll say this too, I love to work in this industry that brings so many diverse voices from so many backgrounds to help solve the problem. It's not a field that's dominated by one group. It's very diverse, and I appreciate the opportunity to work alongside so many other community composters, large-scale haulers, processors. It's great to see the big folks and the smaller folks being able to come together at USCC, BPI Summit, what have you, to collaborate, hopefully collaborate together to figure out how to move our industry forward.
I think that's an amazing sentiment to end it with. And I would say that you're right on. What I find in the industry that's maybe unlike other industries is that we all are kind of on this mission and have such a sense of purpose. And when you are at those conferences, you can feel our contentment with our life path. Like there's a happiness, a contentedness that it permeates the industry. And we've got plenty of challenges, but there's at the end of the day, we're feeling good about what we're doing. And I think that's a powerful thing for a career choice. So yeah, it's awesome. Such a good industry. But Ryan, thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom these past almost 10 years and everything you've learned and working with municipalities and compostable products and all the things. I appreciate you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Jane. Thank you so much for all that you've done for our industry as well on the actual processing side of things, but also to create this podcast where, again, it's another opportunity for us all to learn from one another and to hear about our shared experiences. And I'll just say, too, on that note, anybody out there looking to start up or having questions, don't hesitate to reach out to myself or Adrian. We love to share our experiences. So thanks for the opportunity, Jane.
That's awesome. Oh, you're welcome. We'll see each other in California in February.
Looking forward to it.
See you soon. Gravity rings around
Saturn and Mike. That's our conversation with Ryan Green from Happy Trash Can Curbside Composting. I hope you enjoyed hearing his perspective as much as I did. Check out their Instagram at Happy Trash Compost. Every time I talk with Ryan, I'm reminded how much heart, grit, and creativity small composters bring to their communities. His experience working with the City of Bozeman, navigating public-private partnerships, and processing certified compostable products gives all of us a clearer view of what's possible when collaboration actually works. If there's one takeaway I hope you sit with, it's that solutions to our waste and soil challenges won't come from one sector alone, not from composters alone, not from municipalities municipalities alone and not from corporations alone. It's all of us pushing in the same direction, insisting on better systems, better education, better products, and better care for the land that sustains us. Thank you for listening, for caring, and for being part of this community. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with someone who might appreciate Ryan's story. You can find out more about BPI at bpiworld.org. They've got their summit dates coming up for 2026 and also some great webinars. Thank you to our show sponsors, AgriLab Technologies at agrilab.com/podcast and to Green Mountain Technologies. You can visit them at compostingtechnology.com and mention the composter for a free consultation. You can reach me at info@earthcarefarm.com or through Instagram at @composterpodcast. Big thanks to Galen Brown for being a thoughtful partner in shaping ideas for the show, Yasna Brown for all sorts of tech support, Isadora Biggs for being a great assistant, and to Pete Hamilton for editing these episodes and making my voice sound so smooth. Until next time, keep caring for the land, keep asking hard questions, and keep imagining the world, the heaven, that we can build together.